Welcome back to Killer Pillow Talk. It's episode 5 and probably 6.
5 and 6. Probably we're going to do another two-parter.
Yeah, I meant to do this last month for Pride. But, you know, who says Pride only needs 1 month?
I say it's any time of the year.
Any time of the year. Yay. And I want to preface this by saying that most serial killers are not gay men. And if you're a gay man, that doesn't mean you're a serial killer. So
no one was asking.
I know that, but I just want to say that because I don't want people to assume that that's a thing.
Okay.
And it's not a thing. Actually, most serial killers are middle-aged, white, straight men. So
the worst.
The worst. I know. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, I never was one.
I know, right? I'm not, so I can't say. But
I will be.
But, you know, there's always exceptions. So this is the story of Dennis Andrew Nilsen, a.k.a. the Muswell Hill Murderer or the Kindly Killer.
Nilsen of the TV ratings.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's a Nielsen.
Sure.
What am I thinking of?
I don't know what you're thinking of. I have no idea. But what did he you doesn't call have him? Anything to do with
Kindly?
That. The Kindly Killer.
How are you kindly a killer?
I don't know.
I've heard of kind of killer.
It's like you're nice to the person beforehand, I guess. You know, you're really sweet about it. I don't know. If there is such a thing, I can't say. I didn't give him the nickname, so I don't know.
I already don't like him.
I didn't give him the nickname, so I can't say why he has that nickname. He just does.
Is that now?
No. I haven't even started yet. So,
go ahead.
Let's go. All right, let's get into it. All right, he was born on November 23rd, 1945, in Fraserburgh, Aberdeenshire. I'm not Scottish, obviously.
Is it in Scotland?
It's in Scotland, oh, yes. Cool. I'm sorry to everyone that is Scottish, but I'm mispronouncing it.
Wee laddie, it's Aberdeenshire.
Aberdeenshire, Scotland. That's terrible. I can't do a Scottish accent. That's not one of my...
That's not it.
It's not in my repertoire.
I went to a Scottish school.
I would like to speak in a Scottish accent.
We're going to Scotland as soon as Europe lets us back in.
Yeah, I want to go because I love Outlander.
As soon as Europe lets us all back in.
But yeah. Anyway,
could be 5 years from now.
Yeah, who knows? Okay, so he was the second of 3 children of Elizabeth Duthie White and Olav Magnus Mocksheim. But he he adopted the name Nilsen.
Well, I'm gonna just go out on a limb and say middle child, so solve that case right quick.
Yes, he was a middle child. His father was a Norwegian soldier who traveled to Scotland in 1940 with the Free Norwegian Forces following the occupation of Norway by the Germans. Because, you know.
They did that, yeah.
All that fun, World War II and all that.
They did that.
Fanciness. There's Germans.
Proof. They did it.
Huh? Yep, they were problematic at one point. Not anymore so much, but at that point, yeah. Anyway, he married Elizabeth in May of 1942, and the couple moved...
Who's Elizabeth?
His mother. His father married his mother in 1942.
That made sense. I'm like...
His father, Olav Magnus...
From Frozen.
Mocksheim.
Olav from Frozen.
No. He's not a snowman.
Do I build?
But he adopted the name Nilsen, and then he met his wife, Elizabeth, and they got... married in 1942. I don't know when they met exactly, but he moved to Scotland in 1940, the father. Yeah. And then he married his wife Elizabeth in 1942 in May, and they moved into her parents' house because that's what every couple wants.
Listen, I mean, that's what's happening nowadays, right?
Yeah, it kind of...
You move back into your parents' house.
It's a life hack, really. You know?
Life hack.
So, yeah, but he didn't really take... Olav didn't really take the marriage seriously because... I don't know. He was young, probably, and he was too busy with his soldierly pursuits, you know?
Get him in too young, and they don't know what they're doing.
Exactly. Didn't spend much time at home or really try to find another home that wasn't his
in-laws'
house for him and his wife and their children. So basically, he came over every once in a while, would, like, bang one out with her and then leave.
romantic.
Yeah, I know. That's how the That's children the definition were of romance. Conceived, anyway.
You look at romance in the dictionary. It says Olaf banging one out with Mary. Elizabeth?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
Yeah. So they that didn't last very long. They were divorced in 1948 when Dennis was four.
So that may have had something to do with it.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I'm not going to say that, like...
He's either going to have father issues or mother issues.
I mean, that is fair. A lot of times when people become Sometimes serial killers, both. It's because they have rough childhoods. I'm not saying that always happens. That's not always the case. But that is a common theme in people with that sort
That's
of...
That's why I said it.
You know, hobby. I don't know what you really call that. It's not a hobby. It's
what?
What do you call, like, serial killing? Is that, like, a hobby?
Something you do in your free time.
Is that a calling?
I mean, it could be something you do in your free time.
I mean...
People are called to it.
I don't know. I can't really put it.
Disastrous.
Terrible idea.
Terrible
idea.
Disaster.
I don't know how to phrase that.
No, like hobby's good.
It's a hobby. I mean, some people want to be doctors.
Right. Not as a hobby.
Not as a hobby, as a profession. You get paid for that.
Yeah. You get paid to serve.
Unless you're a hitman.
Unless.
You're a hitman. But then I don't think that's... Are hitmen considered serial killers?
It's lucrative. I'll look into... Wait, what were you doing?
I'm wondering if a hitman would be considered a serial killer. Hmm. What about that Iceman guy?
Iceman?
The guy that Michael Shannon played in that movie.
Michael Shannon. I played the Iceman.
Is that supposed to be a Michael Shannon impression?
Is it a good one?
I don't think so.
You want me to play the Iceman? Not bad. First try?
Second try. All right, so yeah, Dennis was four. His dad left. Bummer.
Sorry, kid.
Dennis was very close with his maternal grandfather. That's his mother's father, Andrew.
So there's your father.
Andrew White. So they had a very close relationship. Dennis described him as a great hero and protector. Of himself, or I guess of Dennis, maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. His grandfather was a fisherman, and whenever he was away at sea, Dennis said, life would be empty for me until he returned.
He'd be a seaman.
Yeah. That's one way of putting it.
No.
Whenever Dennis'
grandfather... How long was he gone? 69 years.
I don't think so. I mean, I think it was more like a short period of...
69
two
days.
Or 3 weeks, probably. Maybe 69 days. I don't know. It's That's various times.
It's 2 months. 2.5 months.
Well, apparently when he was gone, Dennis thought life was like empty. And
that's not exactly true. Same thing.
I know. He's very...
has all the same stuff as he did before, just no grandfather.
Yeah, well, he feels very depressed when his grandfather's not around. So, you know.
Let me guess. He has him frozen in the basement.
No. Would you let me keep speaking and then I could tell you what happened?
Probably not.
No, you won't. Of course, you're going to try and anticipate everything. So, 1951, his grandfather's health was declining, but he kept fishing and working.
That's his everything.
Going out on the boat anyway. And on Halloween of 1951, while Grandpa Andrew was fishing in the North Sea, he had a heart attack and died. And he was 62.
62.
Not 69, no. Mm.
Sorry, that's so sad. That'll kill the guy. No, not the grandfather.
Well, the grandfather's already dead.
The serial killer.
So,
Nilsson.
What happened was they brought
Nilsson.
Where are you getting Nilhouse from? Mm-hmm. This isn't The Simpsons.
Yeah. Anyway, go on.
All right. So they brought the body back on shore, you know, for the funeral and everything. And Dennis's mother asked him if he wanted to see his grandfather to like say goodbye. And he said yes. And so she took him to the room where he lay in the open coffin. And Dennis said his heart started beating strongly while looking at the body. His mother told him.
The first time he saw a dead
body. Grandpa.
All remember, we all remember the first time we saw a dead body.
Yes, his mother told him that Grandpa was sleeping and gone to a better place.
But he got excited by that.
By looking at a dead body, yes.
So, I'm saying as I get it.
Okay, I'm just saying. I don't know. Maybe if he just, because it was the body of his grandfather, it was like
that was just everything.
Some sort of connection to him. But I don't know. Or if it's just a dead body in general. And he was, if it could be anybody.
Dead body in general.
But he was, so he was really withdrawn and quiet after his grandfather died. His older brother, Olav Jr., was really popular, and Dennis really envied that. So he didn't really like, he wasn't very close with his older brother.
Olav Jr.
Yeah, but he did play games and talked with his younger sister, Sylvia. But he was jealous that, like, Olav kept
getting... Olav Jr.
Olav Jr. got...
Dennis and Sylvia.
Yeah. Olav Jr. got more attention, so he was kind of jealous of that.
Yeah, he started with a name.
Yeah, well...
Daddy!
So in 1954 or 1955, he took a solo excursion to the beach in Inverlochy.
Inverlochy,
and was submerged underwater and almost drowned. But his
what life, a rush.
His life was saved by another kid who dragged him onto shore.
And then he killed that kid. Now you try.
He didn't kill that kid, but no, he just, he was in the water, and I think his grandfather and him used to go to this beach all the time on walks.
Inverlochy. Inverlochy.
Yeah.
One word.
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
I'm into it. I'm Inverlochy.
So he went to the beach there, and I guess he just like, walked into the water, and then eventually it was like in the water and just kind of initially started panicking because he was about to drown, and then and then kind of like became very calm because he thought at one point his grandfather was like going to come and save him.
Died at sea. Yeah,
yeah, but it didn't happen. But and no, then,
his grandfather's dead.
Yeah, so but this kid saved him and he was fine. And then after but
we,
that,
it's like bad. We don't like it's like bad though. Like
he tried to kill himself.
He should have like it would have been the world would have been a little bit better
if he killed himself.
If he didn't die. If he died.
In some ways, yes. In a lot of ways, yes.
So this kid who saved him. See, that's the thing. If you think you're doing a good thing.
Well, that kid didn't know.
Right. But that's why I don't do
there's no way to know that, like, oh, this
that's why
person
I don't do anything.
Happens to be a... That's, but then you could be not saving someone who could be, like, a doctor that cures cancer later on in life. You don't know that.
Or a serial killer. It's one
it
or the
could
other.
Be an, either one. It could extreme. Be a core. It could be in the middle and nothing. Maybe they just, you know, invent another type of Pop-Tarts. But, you know, I...
Some people love that.
I'm just saying. It could
I've
be
never a had a Pop-Tart.
Middle of the road thing.
Is that grounds you know, for divorce? I've never had a Pop-Tart.
Creates the new Animal Crossing. I don't know. It's fine. I don't care.
We don't need another animal.
Never eaten Pop-Tarts. I don't mean like another Animal Crossing.
Leaf,
I meant like
new. What would it be? New leaf, new horizon.
I mean like the new.
New.
The new, like the newest fad, like Animal Crossing. I don't mean another Animal Crossing.
Oh.
You know what I mean. So anyway, so this after the incident, Dennis's family moved out of their, the grandparents' house, and into a flat. Cause that's what they call them there.
Where this is in Scotland.
Yes. So they moved out of the wife's parents' house.
Into a flat.
Into a flat.
A flat of their own.
A flat.
They moved into a flat of their own, laddie. Well, that's not good. Hold on.
You can take your time. His mother later married a builder named Andrew Scott, and they had four more children.
Could you, Nate, like, if I told you make up a Scottish name, you would say Andrew Scott, wouldn't you?
Sure.
It's like you look in the dictionary, Scottish name. Well, look, we got the dictionary out a lot this episode. Look in the dictionary.
Under Scottish name, it goes Andrew Scott.
I don't know that it definitely says that, but you'll have to get the dictionary and check for yourself.
We got one.
Okay. Anyway, so they moved to Stricton in 1955. And this is where Dennis was like kind of getting...
Stricton's a place.
It's a place.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of puberty, Dennis discovered he was gay. So,
okay.
And he was
no
very...
No problem there. Oh, well, what year is it?
1955-ish.
It's not looked upon as being the
best. So he wasn't... He was very confused and he felt ashamed of this. He kept his sexuality hidden from his family and the little friends that he did have. He didn't have a lot of friends.
He had few friends?
Few friends.
Okay. But little friends.
Not like small friends.
I mean, like these tiny people.
No, not tiny people.
Oh, man.
I mean, yes. Okay, they prefer to be called little people, but I don't
prefer to be called little friends. Yeah.
I meant like
he
few
friends.
Friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm in Berlin.
So, according to Dennis, many of the boys he was attracted to had similar features to his sister, Sylvia. So he thought maybe it was just like a manifestation of his feelings for her.
Plot twist.
So he fondled her at one point, which led him to believe that he was bisexual.
Is he?
No. He just, like, I think that was him trying to, like, come to terms with his feelings. But then he also fondled his older brother at one point, too.
Covered both bases.
And while his older brother was sleeping, he fondled him. And Olaf Jr. found out about this and then started teasing him by calling him a hen, which is a Scottish slang for a girl.
Really? Or a hen.
Yeah, like a chicken hen.
A female chicken.
Like, you know, when they do, like, bachelorette parties, it's like a hen's night or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I call it.
In the UK.
No, is that what they call it over there?
I think so. It's stag night and hen's night.
Stag night and hen's night.
I think that's so. Not hen's I'm night. Not 100% sure.
Dude, if I was going to write the new hangover, I'd call it hen's night.
Exactly. Ladies.
Bridesmaids.
Okay. Anyway, so when he was 14, he joined the Army Cadet Force.
A lot of gays in the military, but we had a big don't ask, don't tell
policy. Well, he was bored living in Stricton, and he thought, like, this would be a good
way to get out, see the world.
See some more stuff. His father was in the military. Maybe he thought, I'll follow in my father's footsteps. And after he finished school in 1961, he told his mother that he planned to join the Army to train as a chef.
Oh, now I love him. Now I love the guy. Fucking gay chef walking around. I love this guy.
Yes, gay chef in the Army. He enlisted for 9 years of service in September of 1961.
What was the signature meal?
I don't know. It doesn't say.
What'd he cook? He'll do a lot of flambé?
It doesn't say what he cooked specifically. Mm-hmm. He just became a chef. A
couple meringues?
In the Army. Mm-hmm. So he trained with the Army Catering Corps.
Catering Corps. That's right. You know what?
The St. Omer Barracks in Aldershot.
Give me some new ideas for a career. I'm looking to change.
You want to become a gay?
I'm becoming a gay chef, sure.
I mean, you don't have to become. I mean, if you want to become gay,
I'm not gay, but I would love to become a gay chef.
If you are gay, then now's the time to let me know. It's only been 4 years.
I don't think I am.
We're not married yet, so just let go of it.
Anytime, yeah.
No, I know. Let it out. I'll understand.
Yeah. Eventually.
Okay. Anyway, moving on.
Anyway, he's in the catering corps.
He's in the catering corps at the St. Omer Barracks in Aldershot. And while he was there, his latent homosexual feelings kind of came back. Mm. But he kept his sexual orientation a secret from his colleagues, obviously, because, you know, don't ask, don't tell.
Don't ask, don't tell. That's a thing. But it's years before that program. That
I know, but I think in this day and age, it was also, like, pretty much beaten into you.
There were always gays in the military.
I know, but they didn't talk about it. So, he kept it a secret from his colleagues and never showered with his fellow soldiers because he was afraid he would get an erection in front of them while they were all showering together. So he always showered
like,
by
he
himself.
Like stunk until they went to sleep.
I don't know if he like found a time to shower when they weren't in there.
Did he take a horse bath in the sink?
I don't know. He found a time to shower when the other guys weren't there, probably maybe in the middle of the night while everyone was sleeping. And
everybody's sleeping and he's like... You wake up.
And then that would give him ample time to masturbate. So, you know.
Ample time. Yes.
There you go. Everybody wins.
It's a win-win.
Not really, I guess. I mean, probably not, but.
It's a win-win. Honey, let it be a win.
I know. It's kind of sad. But, you know. In mid-1964, he passed his first catering exam and was assigned as a private to the 1st Battalion of the Royal Fusiliers in Osnabrück. Fusiliers.
Fusiliers? I'm looking at your notes.
Fusiliers. Fusiliers. And Osnabrück. Fusiliers. Osnabrück, West Germany.
Germany.
Germany, yep. This is after, of course.
World War II. Finished invading.
It's 1964 now.
Hitler's dead?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
45, right?
Something like that. So when he was deployed there, he started drinking a lot more to, like, ease his shyness, you know.
His alcoholism came out.
Get more comfortable with being around people and socializing.
Right.
Because you remember when he was a kid, he didn't really socialize a lot. So, one night he drank himself into a stupor with a German youth, and when he woke up, he was on the floor of the German's apartment.
Hmm.
Nothing
blacked out.
Yeah. Nothing sexual took place, but it fueled his sexual fantasies of having his partner
sounds like a Scottish word. Having your partner. Yeah, I get here with your partner. I'm going to get this accent eventually, but yeah, no. Show up with your partner.
No, okay.
You two get his
partner, whatever you want to call it. Preferably a young, slender male.
Slender man.
A young, slender male.
Slender man.
Being completely passive. So,
passive slender.
Completely
man,
passive.
Man.
Like, asleep.
Passive Slender Man, which was my band in college. Did you know?
Sure. So you'd be his type, I think, probably.
That was my band in college. Yeah, we were passive. We played one show.
Okay.
Passive Slender Man.
Eventually, this evolved into his fantasies of his partner being unconscious or dead.
Okay, yeah, we never got to the unconscious. We're dead, probably.
I don't know what the appeal of that was. Like, how it got from, like, oh, I want to have a passive partner to, oh, they should be unconscious. That seems wrong. I don't know why he went there, but that's where his mind went. Anyway,
okay.
Whenever he got drunk with his army buddies, he'd often, like, pretend to pass out in the hopes that someone would take advantage of him.
Oh, wow.
Which is also
worrying.
Wow. Unpack that for a second.
Interesting.
That's
almost wrong. More wrong.
I think it's a little bit more wrong. Yeah,
that's
like
interesting.
He wants to be sexually assaulted. That's wrong.
Oh.
That's a very messed up way of thinking.
Jeez.
So. Okay. Anyway, after 2 years in Osnabrück, he returned to Aldershot and passed his official catering exam before serving as a cook to the British Army in Norway.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of tests to become a caterer.
There's a lot of tests, apparently, to become a catering
chef. I don't think it was that
hard. It's the Army. There's always a lot of tests. I assume that because rigorous training tests, boot camp.
You think there are tests to people?
Push-ups, you know, that stuff. So he became a cook at Al-Mansura Prison in the state of Aden.
Prison?
In Norway. Yeah. And this was a little bit more dangerous. He's a prison cook now, and it's 1967. And
a lot of people just make toilet hooch, but he's a prison
cook.
Mm-hmm.
They have those.
Orange is the New Black.
I know, but they
usually... He's the red roll.
No, but he's not in prison. He's hired by the prison.
She worked for the prison, too.
No, but she was in prison, though.
Kind of.
Not kind of. She was in prison. There's no kind of in prison. She was in prison. That's not a spoiler, by the way.
You meet her in the first episode.
You meet her in the first episode.
Put your hand on. That's a spoiler.
I'm
put
not...
your hand on.
Great.
That's a spoiler.
So, this was more dangerous than his other postings.
Mm-hmm.
And one time, Nilsson was kidnapped by an Arab taxi driver who beat him unconscious and placed him in the boot of his car.
That's almost one of his fantasies.
Yeah, close.
Close.
But then,
terrible thing to happen
when
to him,
he the taxi driver stopped and tried to drag Nilsson out of the trunk, Nilsson grabbed a jack handle that was in the trunk and returned the favor and beat the taxi driver and put him in the trunk.
Eye for an eye, that's what I always say.
Yeah, so, you know, and
is he dead?
The taxi driver? No.
Hmm.
I think he's just unconscious in a trunk. I assume.
How do
okay.
you like it?
Yeah. So I mean, the retaliation thing. Yeah. So in Aden, in his new post, he had his own apartment, so he could whack it whenever he wanted to.
Whack.
Yeah, you know, just beat off all the time. And this is when he just started fantasizing about
a jack. What do you call it? A jack hook? A jack?
Jack knife?
Jack. Yeah. That's what I would call him whacking off. Jackknife.
I don't know. I guess it's like a crowbar. Jack handles.
Jack handle, yeah. That's the way. We've all
what they call a crowbar. Or
we've
like
all
maybe,
been around a jack
maybe
handle.
Maybe a tire iron or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Anyway, or when you jack your car up. You know?
Mm-hmm. I got you.
So this is when he started having the fantasies about having an unconscious or dead partner.
This is a weird story.
I know. It's very strange. Yeah. But
it's very up and down.
It is very strange. I know. I don't know how.
Like not into it and into
I don't
it.
Know how we got into this a trajectory of thought. I can't even.
What?
I mean, like how he was like, you know, it'd be great if I had a person that was dead that I could have sex with. That doesn't all seem right. Great.
It seems like the grandfather thing had a lot to do with it.
I think so. Yeah. At a young age, he saw a dead body and was like, this is fun.
Stand by me, basically.
But not to say that that always happens to people that see dead bodies at a young age.
Go on.
Anyway, trying to find my place. So eventually he started using a freestanding mirror that he would position so his head wasn't visible, and then he can imagine he was doing, like, jerking off another man.
This is all harmless so far.
So far, yes. He's not doing anything to anyone else. It's all to himself. Just fantasizing, no,
you know, acting on anything. He eventually kills people, though.
Yes, it gets worse. It always does. It always gets worse.
That's the motto of 2020.
So this action kind of allowed him to, like, split his personality so he could be both the domineering partner and the submissive one at the same time.
But alone.
But alone.
Right.
So, yeah.
I don't have a problem with it now.
I mean, disturbing behavior, yes, but not doing harm to anyone else. So after serving in Aden, he went back to Britain and to serve with Argyll and the Southern Highlanders at the Seton Barracks. He stayed there for a year and then was transferred to Cyprus in 1969.
Greece.
I guess. From there, the...
Cyprus is another island.
Okay.
That's a country.
All right. Well, from there, the regiment traveled to Berlin, where Nilsson had his first sexual experience with a female prostitute.
Back to Germany, though.
Yeah, Germany. German prostitutes.
Capital. And I want to say.
He said he found intercourse with a lady overrated and depressing.
Yeah.
Quote unquote. You know. So then in October 1972.
Sounds consistent with his sexuality.
Yeah, he doesn't. Found a lady sex overrated.
Lady sex.
Depressing. Not a fun experience for him. Wasn't.
Okay, so he knows who he is. This is
great. That's fine. And so in October 1972, Dennis ended his 11-year military career and moved back home with his mom, like you do.
Well, you know, he's smart, right? Because he's saving money. Somebody cooks for you all sometimes, right?
Yeah. Well, at this point, he was, I don't know how old he is at this point, really. Like, 1972, he was born in 45. You do the math.
Yeah. You want me to do the math? He's 27. Yeah.
You're a math person.
No, he's 27. Well, what'd I say? 45, 72? Mm-hmm. 27.
I think. Let me double check. 45 to 72. Boop, boop, boop. Yeah.
27. I stand by.
Stand by 27. So as a 27-year-old man.
I'm 28.
In 1972. His mother's like, why aren't you married? Well, she's not Jewish. I just automatically...
My mom asked me that, too.
I just automatically did a Jewish accent.
Like, you don't want to...
I don't know how to do a Scottish accent, so I did a Jewish accent. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Why aren't you married? No. That's not...
That's like... Hold on. Hello, Eddie.
Why aren't you married?
Hello, Eddie. Why aren't you married? But that's not his mom.
Well, we tried.
We tried.
Sorry to all the Scottish people that were ruining your culture by trying to do bad.
And we love the
Scottish
culture.
Accents. I love
going
the culture.
First country I
love
visit.
It so much. Unicorns, plaid.
Europe, let's assume.
I don't like Scotch, but Charlie does.
First country we go to.
Okay, anyway. So his mother's like, why aren't you married? Start a family, get out there, meet a girl. So Dennis and Olav Jr., who was married at this time, him and Olav Jr. and his wife took Dennis out to see with a group of friends to watch a documentary on homosexuality.
Do they know he's gay?
I think his brother knows.
A little on the nose.
Or, like, used to make fun of him because when he was younger, his brother did fondle him while he was sleeping.
Little on the nose.
Dennis fondled Olav while he was sleeping. Just to clarify.
You want to build a
so
man.
Everyone except for Dennis, like, mocked the subject matter, was like, this is ridiculous. But Dennis actually defended gay rights, obviously, because
he's gay.
He's gay.
This is all consistent with being gay.
Yeah, and so Olaf Jr. and Dennis got into a huge fight over this, which caused Olaf Jr. to out Dennis to his mother. So he told his mother that Dennis was gay.
That's never how you wanted to go.
And so Dennis never spoke to his brother again and had little written contact with the rest of the family after that.
The family wasn't okay with it?
I don't think so. Mm. I mean, I think the closest person he was ever close to with his family after his grandfather died was his sister, but I don't think he even really talked to her that much afterwards either.
So this is all setting up this, like, terrible...
Loner, all alone, has no family. No family connections.
Weird sexual fantasy.
Yeah.
Not weird, just, like...
It's weird. You could say it's weird. It's very weird.
I don't want to stigmatize it.
I'm not stigmatizing. I mean, I think if it wouldn't matter if anyone had this kind of sexual fantasy about having an unconscious person, it's bad.
It leads to danger.
Bad. It's like, maybe I should see a therapist.
Right.
Okay, I don't know if they had therapy. I mean, they had therapy.
Yeah.
But I guess, for something, I don't know.
Conversion therapy, that was more common back then.
That's not okay.
Than regular therapy.
That's not okay.
But that's, wasn't it more common back then?
I mean, I guess because it was less accepted to be a gay person back then, but it's the 70s. Come on.
In Scotland.
I know. It's the thing about Scotland, or I mean, like Ireland. I dated an Irish guy for a long time, and he was like very...
They're secretive.
They were very adamant about not going to therapy, not talking about their problems, just being like, everything is hunky-dory. I'm just going to drink a lot and then pretend everything's fine.
Right.
So that's usually what happens.
Not all Irish people.
I'm not saying all Irish people.
The one you had contact with.
But that one experience, his family was very traditional, and they were like, we don't talk about problems. And they had their one son was gay, actually. And he, his mother actually said, I think at one point, she'd rather he just marry a woman and like have side affairs with men rather than tell her that he was gay.
So it's not, it wasn't, but this family, not very accepted.
Yeah, so just in general, this, like, culture at that time period, the family didn't accept him being gay. So he felt like he was all alone, and then he moved to London in 1972, and he joined the Metropolitan Police Department. Because, there you go.
Yeah. Ugh, the police.
Well, I mean, I guess it makes sense.
Well, but it's London's police.
Because he...
We're mad at our police.
We're mad at our police, but I don't know. We don't like police in general.
But bobbies, they're called. And...
Yeah. So he completed training in April 1973. So I guess their training is a little bit longer than ours because it was like...
Ours is like a 30-minute presentation.
Well, this is at least a year and a few months.
Ours is like...
It's not a year and a few months. It's a few months. But I mean, so that's good.
But if you want a better one...
It's like January to April, sort of.
Annie Shop will make it for you.
So he became a junior constable in Willesden Green.
This is in Britain.
Yes.
Constable.
A junior constable in Willesden Green. Okay.
And I likes what I do. No.
This isn't Mary Poppins. It's very different.
Oh, the constable.
No. So during the summer and fall of 1973, he started going to gay pubs, getting out there, doing a little dating.
He's free.
Having some casual liaisons with men, which he hasn't done before.
That's one of them chef words he learned, liaison.
Why are you speaking a southern accent? So he later described these encounters as soul-destroying because he wanted a long-term relationship.
Mm. So every time you have one of these, a little piece of him died.
He's very dramatic.
Yeah.
Well, a little bit.
You would be too. I think if
severe depression.
You lost all your family, all this stuff happened to you.
That's fair. And he probably has some sort of mental issues.
He'd be dramatic.
In August 1973, after he had a breakup with one of these casual flings that he was having.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided that his personal professional relationships were at odds with each other, like he couldn't be gay and also be a police officer.
Right.
It was like not gonna work.
Mm.
So he decided to leave the police force.
And become gay full-time.
Yeah. And around this time, this is also when his birth father died.
Mm.
And so Dennis inherited £1,000 a month from his father's estate.
I was going to say £1,000 is not a lot, but then you said a month.
Yeah. And it's 1,000 pounds a month.
All right. 12,000 pounds.
Or maybe it might have just been 1,000 pounds, but I don't know.
That's a salary.
It might have just been 1,000 pounds. What does it say?
Oh, wait.
He died that month. But I don't know. I think Dennis just inherited 1,000 pounds. But I mean, in that time period.
In that time period, what was 1,000 pounds?
It was probably better because inflation and all that jazz. So after he officially left the police in 1973, December, he started working as a security guard for a while, but that was
kind of the next job down.
It was kind of like sporadic. And
campus police, mall cop.
Yeah, he didn't have like a set full-time job. So he, in 1974, he found a job as a civil servant.
Servant. Kind of what I am.
Civil servant in May of 1974, and he started a job at the job center on Denmark Street, working to find jobs for unskilled laborers, like unemployment.
Unemployment,
basically.
Yeah. Working as a civil servant in the unemployment office
on Denmark Street. In 1979, he was then promoted to acting executive officer. And then later promoted to like actual executive officer soon after that.
Acting to actual.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in November 1975, before that happened.
Disco is at full height.
Yeah. So in 1975, Dennis saw a 20-year-old man who was at one of these pubs, sees this 20-year-old guy, David Gallican.
I don't have a good feeling about it.
Getting threatened by these two men outside of a pub. And Nelson...
See, I knew he was in immediate danger. I just didn't know from who.
Nelson intervened and took David back to the room he was renting in Cricklewood.
Hello. Welcome to Cricklewood. Is that it?
That anything? That was like a British Southern accent.
Hello. Welcome to Cricklewood. I'd like to welcome you to Cricklewood.
Okay, the two of them spent the night drinking and talking together. You know, so romantic.
Slurp, chat.
David had recently moved to London. He was gay, unemployed, and living in a hostel at the time. Mm-hmm. So, after their first night together, Dennis and David agreed to move in together and find a bigger apartment. Yeah.
That was fair.
So it's a big commitment for kind of someone that you just met 5 seconds ago. But yeah, so they decided to get a bigger place, and they used the inheritance money that Dennis got from his father. And they
£1,000. How much was £1,000?
I can't say. I'm not a financial expert. So they settled on a ground floor flat on Melrose Avenue.
Melrose Place.
That's different. it's not Beverly Hills or whatever it is.
Beverly Hills.
So they didn't have very much furniture, and since David didn't have a job,
just the mirror he came with.
Yeah, he worked. He was one that stayed home and worked hard to furnish and decorate their apartment. But Dennis kind of
did.
No, David did. Yeah. David was, since he didn't have a job or like anything to do with his life, was like at home, like trying to furnish the apartment and decorate it and make it look nice. He was like more the domestic
interior designer.
He was more the domestic role in the relationship. And Dennis, on the other half, would consider himself the breadwinner, and though he was sexually attracted to David, they rarely had sex with each other. So after a year of living together, things began to sour. They started sleeping in separate beds, bringing home other people. David says Dennis never physically harmed him, but Dennis was always very verbally abusive to him. So in May of 1977, after a huge fight, Dennis kicked David out of the apartment. So then Dennis dated several other men in the next 18 months, but nothing lasted. He was just kind of like, again, casual affairs, one night stands, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he started to believe he was unfit to live with. Like, no one wants me. No one can live with me. I'm horrible. That kind of thing. Self-esteem issues. So he worked during the day, and then went home alone and would just drink and listen to music.
Well,
yeah.
It's not a life, but it's...
So on December 30th, 1978, after Dennis spent the day drinking alone in his apartment, he decided that he must at all costs find company.
The musical.
No. Like, physical company.
Physical company, yeah.
If he was looking for the musical, maybe things would have gone differently. So he went to the Cricklewood Arms pub.
Welcome back to the Cricklewood.
And that's where he met 14-year-old Stephen Holmes.
14?
I know, it's very sad.
Oh.
Trying unsuccessfully to buy alcohol. And I was like, Stephen, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'll get that, kid.
So Nilsson thought Stephen was at least 17, which is like, he's like, that's okay. That's still not okay, by the way. FYI, 17-year-old, not okay. And so he invited him back to his place to drink and listen to music with him. And the pair drank heavily together, and then they fell asleep.
So far, he hasn't killed anybody.
Yeah, it's going to change real quick. Okay. So Dennis woke up...
Like, we're halfway through it. We're 40 minutes into this.
I'm getting to that part. Okay. All right, Dennis woke up the next morning and found Stephen asleep in his bed and was afraid to wake him because if he woke him up, then Stephen would leave, and he has a fear of abandonment, so he grabbed a necktie, climbed on top of Stephen, and strangled him until he was unconscious. Then he proceeded to drown Stephen in a bucket of water.
All right, I'm silent. Yeah. Why? Yeah. What the hell?
I mean, I guess hypothetically speaking, if he's dead, then he can't go anywhere. I don't know.
What the hell?
It's a messed up way of thinking. And then afterwards, Dennis masturbated over the body twice and put the corpse beneath the floorboards. So.
What the hell?
You know, like you do. You keep your body in the floorboards.
Gross.
And so the body remained there for almost 8 months until Dennis built a bonfire in the garden area by his building. So, like, there was, like, they had access to the garden area in
the
building that he was living in. I guess so. I don't know. He was on the, like, basement floor, though, so I don't know if anyone complained about it. So he could put things under the floorboards because he was in the basement. So he built a bonfire in the garden area by his building and burned it on August 11th, 1979.
Jeez, but you would smell that too.
Yeah, he put like...
A burning body.
I mean, he mentions in later on he put tires on top of the body to like mask the smell of like burning flesh.
To hide the smell. So people
thought he was just burning a bunch of cars. I don't know.
So people get the better smell of burnt rubber.
So much better. So at this point, Dennis later said that during this time, he started down the avenue of death and the possession of a new kind of flatmate.
Flatmate.
Yeah.
Under the floor.
The flat.
Flat.
Not moving mate.
Right.
So he, for a while, he didn't like try and repeat this because he was like, freaked out.
I killed someone. I struck gold once.
Yeah, so, but then on October 11th of 1979, he tried to murder a student, Andrew Ho. A student from Hong Kong that he met in a pub.
Gay as well?
Martin's Lane. Yes, I guess so. Because Dennis invited Andrew back to his place to have sex.
He's into it, yeah.
But then tried to strangle him. But Andrew escaped and reported the attack to police. So Dennis was questioned about it, but then Andrew eventually dropped the charges, so he was never actually arrested.
How? Arrest the guy. You got him.
I know.
You were there.
I know. It's a bad idea. If you think if he had just been like, get this guy.
He was there.
Then maybe things would be different. So, and then on December 3rd, 1979, a couple months later, Dennis meets Kenneth Ockenden, who is a 23-year-old Canadian student in town visiting family. I don't think he's... It doesn't say whether he's gay or not. I don't think he is. They met in a West End pub. Or maybe he is, but... Yeah.
West End.
They met in a West End pub. Dennis offered to show Kenneth around London and lured Kenneth to his flat, promising dinner and more drinks. So, you know, Kenneth doesn't know anybody and is like, oh, this guy seems so nice. Let's go hang out. So they stopped on the way back to Dennis's apartment to buy some more booze, like whiskey, rum, beer. And Kenneth insisted on splitting the bill with him. So there's a paper trail there.
Hmm.
Not that, I don't know if that matters.
Is that anything?
It might matter.
Can we use that to catch this guy?
It might matter later on. I haven't gotten that far. But Dennis said he didn't remember killing Kenneth, but he used his own headphones to drag Ken across the floor with wire wrapped around his neck before strangling him.
Oh.
So he put headphones on Kenneth to listen to music and then used the headphones to strangle him and then like pulled him around by the headphones while they were still stuck around his neck.
Thanks for reminding me of Fermi.
I know, it's bad. And then Dennis poured himself some rum, you know, just for funsies.
Well, he's not on the apple.
Took the headphones off of Dennis, or of Kenneth, and then started listening to music with them on.
What were you hearing? What were you listening to?
I don't know what he doesn't say.
Kenneth, what were you listening to? Hello? Kenneth? Beetle.
So, the next day, he bought a Polaroid camera and took pictures of the body in suggestive poses. Then he lay Ken's body above him on the bed, like he was on the bed.
Photo shoot anywhere?
Ken was spread eagled on top of him.
I don't like this.
Dennis just kind of laid there and watched TV with the body on top of him for several hours.
First of all, the decomposition of these bodies.
Yeah, there's no refrigeration or anything going into
the
it.
The smells. I don't even know how you. The first dead body he saw was like. Kempt. It was like they was filled with formaldehyde. Like it was a person, right?
Like kempt.
Kempt. Like kept up. Like,
no, it was like it was kempt.
No, not kempt. it's like kept up, right? Like
okay.
Hold on.
Kempt.
Yeah.
We don't need to figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
No, we don't have to do that. I'm still talking. We don't need to go through this and look up the word kempt. That's gonna take too long. Charlie?
Maintained in a neat and clean condition.
Okay, great, fine.
Well cared for.
Wonderful. So after several hours of just watching the TV with the body on top of himself, he put it in plastic and put it beneath the floorboards with his
collection. That's my hiding spot.
So over the next 2 weeks, Dennis took out the body 4 times to put it in a chair next to him while he drank and watched TV so he wouldn't be alone. You know?
It's weird.
It's very weird.
It's like it's sad and weird.
It's sad and very
I'm
weird.
So sad and so weird. Now.
It's very creepy and sad. I know.
Oh.
It's not a good combination.
What's that? We should change the channel? Okay.
So
it's on Nickelodeon?
Over the next 2 weeks. Yeah, I said that. So then Nelson found his victim number 3, 16-year-old Martin Duffy, on May 17th, 1980. Martin was a catering student in Birkenhead who hitchhiked to London without telling his parents.
So I like that they had something to talk about. Catering student.
Yeah. So he hitchhiked to London without telling his parents after he was questioned by the British Transport Police on May 13th for evading train fare.
That's
so
why you
he
always tell people
took a train and didn't buy a ticket and then got in trouble for it and then kind of ran away to
now
like
I understand that you
not
tell
get in trouble
people
and then met Dennis and that was fun.
Tell people where you're going or else you're gonna meet Dennis.
But, yeah, so
Dennis the
Duffy was sleeping in the Euston railway system for 4 days and then Dennis found him on his way home from a union conference in Southport. So Martin was exhausted and hungry, so he eagerly accepts Dennis's
come in, I got food,
offer
of
food and lodging. So
alcohol left over from when Kenneth bought it.
So after Martin fell asleep in Dennis's bed, Dennis put a ligature around his neck and then sat on his chest while tightening the ligature until Duffy passed out. Dennis then took Martin's unconscious body and drowned him in the kitchen sink.
So he strangles and then drowns people.
Yeah, I don't know why he needs to do both, but he likes to do both. So after he kills Martin, he decided to take a bath with the body. So they like washed themselves together, or he washed themselves together. Dennis later commented that Duffy was the youngest looking I had ever seen, which I was like, I don't think that's true.
How do we know all this?
I just know this from Wikipedia. This is all from Wikipedia.
Who's
he made comments about this, like, after he was captured and confessed.
Wow. He got detailed.
He got into it.
Like, yeah, I took him back, and then I strangled him and drowned him. And
a lot of them, like, I mean, I'll get into this later, but a lot of, some of them, he doesn't even remember, like, what their name was or
who
they are. He's like, I killed somebody. I don't know what happened. I just, you know, it's kind of like lather, wash, rinse, repeat, that kind of thing.
Oh.
And I'm like, that's
literally
great.
Literally for that.
That is great. Wonderful. So After they took a bath, right. Nelson put the body on a kitchen chair.
Chair. That's the word.
That's what I said. Chair. And then he moved it to the bed where he kissed, complimented, caressed the corpse before and after masturbating while sitting on the stomach. Mm. So that's fun. You know, just a general date night for Dennis.
It's a thing. It's a thing that he does. It's what he does.
I know. It's wrong. You know, I personally would think it would be better if you had someone to actually reciprocate.
Just keep people alive. Don't kill people.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like, if you had someone's alive, simple. They can enjoy it with you. You can have a conversation with them.
You don't have to kill them.
They can also reciprocate the movements and hopefully be into it and not.
All everybody's consenting.
It's all above board.
Literally, and then
it's nice
because above board is the opposite.
This is under boards.
What happens to these people?
Mm. Oof.
Oof. Woof.
Okay. So, Dennis stored the corpse in the cupboard this time for above 2 days board. Until behind it became board. Bloated, and then he moved it under the.
That's what happens. Yeah. That's what I'm asking them the whole time. Like, what I don't know why
the bloating, the smell. I don't know why. I guess he didn't have a sense of smell or didn't care. I don't know. I can't imagine his neighbors were like, why does it smell like ass in your apartment? Yeah. Why does it smell like
decomposing ass in your apartment?
Rotting flesh in your apartment? So at this time, Dennis's killing began to escalate because usually in serial killer terminology, there's a point where they just like go off the rails.
Because he was on the rails before.
He wasn't on the rails before, but he was. It's worse. It happens more often now. Because he needs more stimulation or something. I don't know. So on August 20th, Dennis met William Sutherland at a pub near Piccadilly Circus.
Bill Sutherland, yeah.
Bill was a 26-year-old full-time father and part-time male prostitute. Because, you know, that's
side hustle.
Side hustles. You got to do it. Nelson doesn't remember how he killed him, other than that Bill was strangled while Dennis stood or knelt in front of him, and the body, the next morning there was, quote-unquote, another dead body. You know, just cash, another dead body.
Another notch in the floorboard.
Basically, it's kind of like he's just like racking them up. This one with this one, and then so the next even like
cupboard's full.
The worst part is the next seven people that he killed, he doesn't even remember their names. So they're all unidentified. He remembers how they were murdered, but he doesn't remember any of their names.
Hmm.
He remembers how they were murdered and how long he kept their bodies, and that's it. That's terrible. Completely.
Okay.
Sociopathic, yeah. Psychopathic, doesn't care. So John, I've numbered them as John Doe number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Thank you for doing that.
Yes, so John Doe number 1, Nelson met at Cricklewood Arms in September of 1980.
Hello, welcome back a third time to Cricklewood Arms.
Yeah, this is kind of like his hunting ground. And he described him as an Irish laborer with rough hands, about 27 to 30, who wore a suit and jacket. Later, Dennis claims to have made this one up. So,
a young professional.
That one may false? Or not be real, because he didn't say that he made it up later on.
Oh.
But still.
False. Fake him. Fake news.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
Fake news.
But he did kill a number of other people, so really.
Real news.
Those are. It doesn't really matter now. He's past the point of redemption.
So one might be far-fake. Far-fetched.
But still, he did kill a bunch of other people.
But two?
Number two was killed in October 1980. Nielsen said he was a slender Filipino or Mexican male prostitute, about 5'10", between 20 to 30 years old.
Very different.
With gypsy-like features. So he doesn't have...
Or Mexican?
He doesn't have, like, a specific...
This guy's racist, too.
I don't think he's racist. I think he doesn't have a specific type. I think it's more about, like, this person is here. It's an opportunity. Doesn't have a... I mean, he does have a specific type, but he's not afraid to go outside of that type if something happens to come upon him and is available. So, JD number 3.
JD.
We're calling him JD.
JD.
was said to be an English vagrant in his 20s that Nelson found sleeping in a doorway at the top of Charing Cross Road in
You're gonna get hurt, buddy. Come on. 1980.
He was emaciated with a pale complexion and missing several teeth.
Slenderman.
Dennis took the vagrant back to his apartment and strangled him to death while he slept. The vagrant's legs moved in a cycling motion while Nelson choked him, so it was like he was riding a bike.
You're using your arms.
I'm using my arms, but it was the legs.
I understand. No, I got it.
It's just like...
It's him like fighting for his life.
Trying to run away, but it wasn't working. It's very sad. I know. Oh,
just him fighting for his life,
huh? Mm-hmm, you know. So...
Why are you doing this to me?
JD number four was an English long-haired hippie, quote-unquote, between 25
and
30.
What are you listening to? The Beatles.
Nelson met in the West End after pubs had closed in either November or December. He also later claimed to have made that one up, too. So,
oh,
I don't know.
I want the hippie in the first guy to be real.
I don't know. So, at this point, the space under Dennis's floorboards was getting pretty
full,
tight.
Crowded. Three's a crowd.
This is when Nelson decided to remove all the bodies he had been keeping under there for the past year.
I'm telling you.
That's gotta smell.
That smell.
I know. I couldn't imagine. I can't even imagine, like, staying
in the
apartment.
I got a trash can in there.
I can't even imagine staying in the apartment when my dogs have peed on the mat and, like...
I got a trash can. There's no dead bodies in there, but there is, like, meat packages.
I vomit. Mm. Okay. Mm. All right. Anyway. So, he dissected them in the bathtub and boiled them in a large cooking pot to separate the skin from their heads, like you do. And put all the dissected parts into a pair of suitcases that he bought for this. He bought this specifically for this.
You didn't lead that it was going to get this bad.
Mm. So yeah, he puts them in suitcases and then finally he burns them in a big communal bonfire on waste ground behind his flat. So I guess this is like
with
a
more tires
area.
Or
with,
no?
Yeah, this is where he does to mask the smell. He threw on an old car tire on top of everything. And also three neighborhood children apparently came and watched him do all this.
I thought you were going to say he threw three children
on. No, he did not throw any children on here. They just came to, like, hang out and be like, oh, fire!
Mister, what are you doing? Burning tires on top of people?
They didn't know it was people because they were in suitcases.
Mister, the tire was going to melt on top of the suitcase.
That's what I want, kids.
But
good, my Michael Shannon impression again as you play them.
I think later
that's what
on,
I want, kids. Is that it?
Yeah, I think later on he describes like this scenario where like he imagined the kids like dancing around the fire,
party
like it's
girl,
a,
fire.
Like a funeral pyre type of situation.
It's a fire.
He's like, that's wrong. So, JD number five, Dennis met at the Golden, that's what I'm calling John Doe's now.
Jonathan!
The Golden Lion Pub in Soho around January 4th, 1981.
Close to home.
Mm.
Soho is in
New
York.
No, Soho in London.
Ah,
there's
damn
a Soho in London.
There is?
Yes.
Wait, fill me in on this. I've never heard of this. There's a Soho in London?
Yes.
South of what?
I don't know. I'll look it up later. He described him as an 18-year-old blue-eyed young Scot. Gotta love those. Dennis lured him back to his flat by challenging him to a drinking contest.
Look at that. I'm wrestling.
So he got JD number five drunk, and then Nelson strangled him with a
You're
necktie.
You're drunk, JD. What do you think?
He got the guy drunk. He strangled him with a necktie and then put him under his favorite floorboards.
Happy Father's Day.
So then by April
I don't like this guy.
This of 1981.
Have I made that clear?
Yes. He killed JD number 6 and number 7.
Double.
JD number 6 was an English skinhead Dennis had met on Leicester Square.
All right.
Who had a tattoo on his neck that read "cut here" like right across his throat.
Did you listen?
So Dennis was like, "Okay.
Okay.
I will."
Direct.
Don't mind
direction.
If I do. I'll cut it off with a tie.
It was like IKEA.
A necktie or something. He didn't actually cut it off, but you know, strangled it. So
never had
like,
him
oh,
come with disassembly instructions.
And I just hold on to his neck right here.
I usually build something and then lose the instructions.
And number 7 was what Nelson called a Belfast boy. A 5'9 man in his early 20s.
Slenderman.
When recollecting this to investigators later on, Nelson casually said, end of the day, end of the drink, end of a person, floorboards back, carpet replaced, and back to work at Denmark Street.
It's cryptic and chilling, but it's also like
a nursery rhyme.
It's like a poem. It's like, it's a little bit, he's waxing a little bit poetic here. End of the day, end of the drink, end of a per. Something about that is beautiful.
No.
No.
It's not.
No?
Right. It's not. He's talking about killing people and then just going back to work like it's any old Saturday or Friday or Monday or whatever it is.
End of the week.
Friday night. Go home. End of the day.
He knows that end of
the
week.
Go kill someone. Come back to work
on Monday. And it hasn't been your day, drink, or even your person.
On September 17th, 1981, Nelson found 23-year-old Malcolm Barlow slumped against a wall outside his house. Dennis asked if he...
Scotland? Or this is in Britain?
This is still in London.
Because Malcolm is a...
I don't know if he's Scottish or not. It doesn't say. Dennis asked if he was all right, and Malcolm...
You all right, buddy?
Malcolm said his epilepsy medication was weakening his legs.
I've got weak legs from epilepsy.
So Nelson led Malcolm into his apartment and called an ambulance.
Oh, here you go, buddy. Come over here.
So the next day, Malcolm went to the hospital, and the next day he gets out of the hospital and he goes back to thank Dennis for helping him out.
Gross.
So Dennis invites him in and gave him a meal and a rum and coke.
Send him back to the hospital.
Malcolm fell asleep on the sofa, which is the big first mistake. Don't fall asleep in this man's house. At this point, Nelson strangled him and put his body underneath his kitchen sink the following morning.
Oh, did everything except put him under the kitchen sink.
So at this point, around this time, Dennis's landlord was deciding that he wanted to renovate Dennis's apartment. And so he asked Nelson to leave.
Can he just come in and do that?
No, he was asking Nelson to move out because he wanted to renovate it.
Oh, Nelson, you gotta go.
Dennis, you gotta go. You've been living here for a long time.
Those floorboards have been there forever. No one's ever pulled them up. We gotta renovate.
First, Dennis was like, no, you can't do that.
No, don't come in.
And the landlord offered to pay him £1,000 to vacate, and he was like, all right, fine.
Dude, what is this guy and attract? Is this on his vision board? He, like, attracts £1,000.
He attracts £1,000?
Every time. His father died, £1,000. This guy wants to move, £1,000. I want it. What is the secret? This guy's doing the secret, isn't he?
Okay. Yeah.
I wish I had £1,000.
Anyway, this is when he moved to his attic flat at 23D Cranley Gardens in Muswell Hill.
Attic flat?
Yeah. So instead of being on the basement, he's on the top floor now.
Penthouse, as we call it.
Which is not great for hiding bodies under your floorboards.
There's no hidey hole.
So on October 5th, 1981, he moved there on October 5th, 1981. So the day before he left, he had another celebratory bonfire, complete with the old tire chopping, and his last 5 victims.
Oh, I'm going to call this a bonfire at this point.
Do you want to stop there? Because then we can start with the...
You're not done writing?
That's the last of the victims that he does in that one apartment. Then he does a couple in his new apartment. And then
really? All right, so before we and he move to the new apartment, why don't we call it? Because we've been talking for an hour.
Yeah, I know.
We'll call it. I don't like this man.
I know, he's terrible.
No, I have no problem with him being gay. I just do not
like... It has nothing to do with him being gay. He could do this to women and he would still be a terrible person.
Right. I don't like him.
Yeah.
Don't like him.
No.
I mean, he's killed a lot of people so far.
Uh-huh.
10.
A fair amount, yeah.
A couple handfuls.
I think he's...
Because there were 7 John Does.
I think there's 12 altogether, but... I could be wrong. There might be more than that.
In the beginning or 12 altogether total?
Total. So we're getting towards the end of the... Like, after he moves to his new apartment.
All right, we'll do that in a new episode.
It's less... easy for him to like hide them and stuff and get rid of the bodies.
Well, I'm okay if you are.
I'm okay. Right. I think we've had enough.
Yeah, I'm a little freaked out. My chest is already hurting.
I'm sorry. I didn't, when I got in, like, I didn't know all of this, like, information. It's like,
turn the air on
him. Actually didn't know this story until I, like, started researching it, but I was just like, what's an interesting, like, serial killer? I didn't know. I was trying to get ones that, like, I didn't know about either, so I could, like, come into it, like, kind of fresh and be, like, learn things. And I also didn't want to do something that, like, so many other people have done before.
I've never heard this before. I
haven't heard this one either.
I'm not an expert.
But yeah,
I steer clear of this stuff. You're the one who makes me listen to it.
So this was like when we were doing H.H. Holmes. This was like on the, like, one of the choices that I had
for
one to do. So
well,
yeah.
Let's talk next time.
Okay, that's all for now. I figured we'll need a little bit of a breather, and we'll reconvene next time with the rest of the story of Dennis Nilsen, the Muswell Hill murderer.
We'll take a peek under those floorboards.
Mm-hmm. See you next time.
Burn a tire.
Burn a tire.